Entrepreneurship creates new value for customers. It doesn't have to be in new markets. It's perfectly possible to carve out profitable growth spaces in well-established markets with the right entrepreneurial approach.
This is the Economics for Business podcast. We're here to help all businesses become champions for customers and value, improving lives with preferred and innovative products and services. We offer you the knowledge and tools to make your entrepreneurial journey a successful one. Now, here's your host, Hunter Hastings.
Hi, Hunter Hastings here. We've defined entrepreneurship as the pursuit of new value for customers, a value experience they're willing to pay for, providing cash flow and profit to the value-generating business. The challenge of creating new value might sound intimidating to some. How is it possible, given all the great firms already in the market serving customers' needs? Does my firm have to find and establish a new market in order to innovate and grow? The answer is not always. The pursuit of new value for customers can take place in existing markets, even the most well-established, longest duration, and most crowded markets. How can this happen? Because there are always customers who pine for something better than they have today, something that caters to them more precisely and personally, speaks to them, makes them feel like they've filled some kind of a gap in their experience. One of the most crowded business fields is apparel. It would seem that consumers have as many choices as they could possibly have, and a flow of new choices every day. Is it possible to conceive of and create apparel that meets an unmet need? Is it possible to conceive of designs that engage customers in ways they've never been engaged before? Is it possible to build a brand that stands for values that are captured by no other brand? Is it possible to enable a new bonding with customers? Are there new features and benefit combinations that will capture customers' imaginations in new ways? The answer to all of these questions is yes. Today, we're talking to James Kent, the founder and owner of Rogue White and Blue. It's all one word on the internet without the and, roguewhiteblue.com. Go there and use the promo code E4B for a site-wide discount. James will tell us his entrepreneurial journey story today and how he utilized his knowledge, his experience, his ethic of service, and his individual commitment to create, launch, and grow an original and unique brand in the most crowded space. It's an inspiring story. James, welcome to the Economics for Business podcast.
Hey, thanks for having me on, Hunter.
Well, this is going to be a great episode. We're going to talk about your business, which is called Rogue White and Blue. We'll find out all about that. And it's an excellent example, I think, of both business building, which you'll tell us about, and brand building. It's got some very distinctive brand features. And of starting a business from scratch based on hard work and individual effort, which we prize very much. So we often talk about entrepreneurship, James, as a journey. And we like to tell journey stories. So let's get a little bit of yours, where you started from, where you grew up, whatever you want to tell us about your pre-entrepreneurship life.
Sure. Yeah. So, gosh, it's one of those stories. You're like, where do I begin? I was born in 1990. I'm just kidding. I'll skip the boring stuff. But, gosh, in a nutshell, I grew up in a very outdoorsy family. My dad was in the Forest Service, actually. He's an attorney now, but so very flip-flopped there. But we grew up in a very outdoor-oriented lifestyle in Portland, Oregon. I got really into multiple things in the outdoors. Snowboarding was my number one passion. I love snowboarding. And that naturally brought me to the great state where I reside now, which is Utah. So I went to the school, University of Utah, in, gosh, 2009. It feels like eons ago. It wasn't that long ago, but it feels like a long time ago. And I have been out here ever since. I just couldn't get enough of Utah. I absolutely love it. I met my wife out here, so now we own a home out here and started a family. And gosh, I can go on and on about kind of me starting off. But do you want to hear about kind of how I led into Rogue White and Blue? There's so many steps in between.
Well, no, that's exactly what we want to do. So you've given us some hints about
outdoors and your interests and so on. But yeah, go take the next step. How did you decide to become an entrepreneur, and how did you birth this business?
It's so interesting to say like decide, because I feel like it like just happened. It's like what I was supposed to do. So to me, it's always kind of, it's felt like there's been no other choice. I feel like from a young age, I've always been a self-starter and always kind of wanted to work for myself. But let's jump here before I get way ahead of myself. So right when I started going to school at University of Utah, like most college kids, I was looking for some extra income. And, you know, the bills don't pay themselves when you're in college, so you got to work. I started working part-time at a retail apparel company called Fan Sports Apparel, which was just all sporting goods, lots of different teams, et cetera. Kind of like Lids, if any of your listeners have heard of that, just MLB, NBA, NFL, et cetera. I worked part-time there, and I was working part-time there almost to full-time hours, really, kind of on and off, until I graduated at the University of Utah. And right when I graduated, that's when an opportunity opened up there, and I became a full-time assistant manager. I was like, yeah, I can go full-time now. I got nothing but time. School's done. I didn't have kids or anything yet, so I jumped full-time. So long story short there, I went from assistant manager, worked my way up to store manager, and then from there worked my way up to district manager. So that was kind of when I kind of entered the more corporate side of sales. I did that for, I had that job for almost about 10 years total, from the starting of part-time till when I left. And one of the big reasons I left was, I think I got a little bit, you know, in that corporate environment, I got a little bit bored, honestly. Like, my days seemed very normal. We had a really good process. The system was there. It was a great company to work for. And I felt like, okay, it's time to do something different, you know, especially at that age when I didn't have kids or anything. Money, luckily for me, was not a huge motivator, in the sense that, like, I was like, yeah, the pay is great. It's stable. But like, I want to be excited. I want to like feel like I'm leaving my footprint or my fingerprints on something. So I jumped from that job into working for a startup called Native Camper Vans in Salt Lake City. And Native Camper Vans was fully a startup company. I was actually their first employee. They're based out of Denver, Colorado. And I had found their job on Indeed. I was looking for kind of more part-time work, because like in my head already at that point, I knew, I was like, I want to mold something. I want to mold some kind of business. And I really didn't know yet. You know, I had worked in retail, so obviously it makes sense that I run my own, you know, apparel company now. But at the time, it still hadn't really clicked. So I started working for Native Camper Vans. I found them on, I believe, like Indeed Jobs or one of those. And my idea was, I'm going to find something that I could work, you know, pretty part-time or kind of full-time while I'm really starting to come up with, what do I want to do? What do I want to build for myself? And that ended up being like one of the best experiences, actually, because it dunked me right into the waters of what running a startup really was, because these guys gave me the keys really to the company. I mean, out here, they were like, hey, listen, we have a location that we rented out. We have no marketing. We have, you know, we'll do some online Google, you know, AdWord advertising for you. But other than that, we're going to see if you can make it go. And that'll let us know if we kind of have a company that we can start opening up in different, you know, I was like patient zero for them in starting like the rest of their business framework. So, but it was weird. It wasn't like there was a lot of pressure on that. They had they were like, hey, we get it. We're not giving you any resources here besides, you know, a paycheck, and you're going to just try to build this thing from scratch.
Yeah, so you're an entrepreneur then, just in a branch office. Yeah,
absolutely. I mean, I had access to pretty much everything they do, and I was essentially like a business partner to them, which was awesome, because it really did. I was like, whoa. Because like I said, while I was working for Native Camper Vans, I kind of had the idea already brewing for my own company, my own startup. And I was like, whoa, am I ready for this? This is a lot. You know, you really start seeing the cash flow, the money go in and the money kind of go out, and how much it really takes, you know, to get something like this started. So, gosh, the next step here, Hunter. Sorry, yeah. It's a long, like, domino effect.
This is good. We like this. Keep going.
Rogue, white, and blue. So, next step. So, we had kind of a family tragedy occur. And so, I had a family member who was killed in action. She served in the Navy, and already at this time, so it's interesting, you know, at this age, I feel like to an extent, I was going through what I would kind of call like a quarter life crisis. I kind of wanted to, you know, like start my own business. I was working for a startup. This huge kind of family tragedy occurs, kind of brings the whole family together. And my family has a pretty big military background. And it's one of those things that like has always kind of been in my head of interest. Like, it's like, oh, maybe I'll join the Army one day. That's something that never really, it just didn't happen. It's just like life moved so fast once I got out of high school to college to working. It never happened. So I was sitting there at 29 years old, all this startup stuff's going on, big family stuff was going on. And I was like, I just need to, there was too much. I needed to hit a button that I just needed to hit a stop button for a second. And me hitting a stop button, for most people, that's like, hey, take a sabbatical, maybe if you have some money saved up. I, you know, talked to my wife, we had some serious conversations, and I was like, hey, you know, I know you're gonna kill me right now if I try to join the Army full time. It's not something that like she was working in Salt Lake City full time at the time. I was like, but I feel like I need to do something that's totally different than what I've been doing. It's something that I feel like I'm doing like on a level of service, like from a service perspective. So I joined the National Guard. So now we go from startup to National Guard. I do the whole, you know, basic training thing. I've been in for about, gosh, not very long, like 3 years now or so. So I got about 3 years left on my contract. And that ended up being an amazing experience too, because that was during basic training, I really was able to start formulating a lot of the ideas I had that I wanted for my business. Even from a financial perspective, you know, there was a signing bonus, luckily, when I joined. So I was able to kind of start game planning around like, okay, I'm going to have X amount of dollars coming out of training that I can really use to start my own business here. You know, I'd already talked to my wife about this. We'd had it all planned out, but it still kind of came down to, okay, what exact business do you want to start? And sorry if I'm ranting at you, Hunter. I feel like when I keep talking and you don't drop in, I'm like, man, I'm just getting off topic here.
No. Let's go there. How did you decide which industry, which kind of a business to start? What kind of options did you look at and how did you narrow it down?
So I obviously, most of my background really was retail. It really was that, you know, about decade period where I was in the retail world. And then getting that startup experience, I was like, man, I would love, like, what I really know is apparel. I understand that world more than any other world in business. And I understand it's a commodity. So there's going to be pros and cons to starting a commodity. And I think that's where I was like, okay, if I'm going to start an apparel company, like, what would make us stand out? Because, like, I feel like, especially nowadays in 2022, everyone and their mom has some kind of clothing company or has dipped into it to an extent. It's just very available. There's lots of made-to-order companies out there, and it's very available to do. So the first kind of stream of thought I had when I started thinking about apparel, I was like, why would I jump? I want to do this because that's what I know. I don't know anything else about any other business, like, besides running a retail company. And I needed to figure out a way to stand out. I was like, how do I become an uncommon commodity, right? Like, you have to narrow it. The pool is gigantic, right? So I wanted to start from a really genuine place too. And this is kind of like during training, I'm really thinking about this. I'm really thinking about kind of the ideas, the designs, the aesthetic of what I wanted my brand to be. What do I want it to be about too? Because I have to be passionate about the company and kind of what it stands for. And kind of going back to me loving the outdoors, I was like, I would think it would be so great to have an awesome outdoor lifestyle company. But immediately I was like, that's been done a billion times now at this point. And it kind of brought me back to a couple individual moments when my wife and I were in some big outdoor retailers. And we were looking for something a little more patriotic in the lifestyle brand sections. We were looking for more of like, man, where's a cool like mountain style t-shirt with an American flag, something that's just like patriotic, but I love the outdoors and I love backpacking and hiking. And we had a couple different moments like that. So during training, for some reason, it's like these past kind of, I don't know if it's the environment there or what, being disconnected from your cell phone, having nothing to connect you to the outside world, at least digitally. It seems like sometimes memories in those moments kind of flood back to you and you have a clarity in the way you're thinking. So none of this felt forced. And these ideas started becoming to me where I was like, there are no brands out there that are like kind of a patriotic version of Patagonia, if you will. There's nothing out there. And there's people like my wife and I, we're very patriotic people. We love this country. We think the Constitution is one of the greatest documents, if not the greatest document, you know, ever written. And unless you're religious, of course, and then there's the Bible, obviously. But I'm not dipping into that. Right. I'm talking about
getting into that.
Exactly. But so that's kind of where the idea, where I was like, okay, I want to be a patriotic outdoor lifestyle brand. I think this is going to set us apart, where if we can take, you know, those, because I knew that I wasn't alone in this. I was like, there's so many people like me that love backpacking and hiking and getting outside, but those same people also love the country and have a sense of gratitude. But like, it seems like all the outdoor brands out there kind of just focus on just the outdoor
just
aspect.
Outdoors,
so
yeah.
I really wanted to, I wanted to intertwine it with a level of patriotism. So that's what led me to kind of thinking of, I was like, okay, well, you know, some patriotic slogans for the brand name, right? You're thinking, you're like, okay, well, red, white, and blue, that's a pretty patriotic one. Stars and stripes, maybe stars and hikes. No, I'm not going to do that. What about not red, white, and blue, but how about we're going to take a different route? We're going to be rogue white and blue. We're going to be rogue, which is wild, unexpected, like the American landscape. And we're going to really lean into that. And we're going to have another different angle, where we're a patriotic company. We have patriotic design ideas. That's when I was thinking, I was like, well, we should do them American made to the best of our ability possible, at least manufacture everything here. So these are all the ideas, you know. So coming out of training, I was like, okay, let's get in training. Also, I was able to get a lot of this on paper, which really, really helps, I think, in regards to anything brainstorming wise in any business, how early on you are during the actual conception of it, during, you know, the actual, any process, getting your ideas in writing and referencing them over and over again is super important. I think that's huge.
Yep.
A quick note. Economics for Business is a uniquely Austrian platform to help entrepreneurs build value-generating businesses at every stage of the entrepreneurial journey. We've now launched online with an outstanding database of entrepreneurial knowledge, tools to solve specific business problems, and a community exchange to share information and experiences. Check it out at econ4business.com. That's econ, the number 4, business.com. Explore and let us know what works best for you in the feedback section. Now, back to our conversation.
You've illustrated a couple of big things, James. One is one of the theories of entrepreneurship is that people figure out who they are, what they love, what they know, and they go from there. So you've got a good sense of who you are. You know what you love, both the outdoors and the patriotic aspect, and what you know is retail. So you've put that together in a brilliant way. And another item that we always focus on is innovation is often combination, and you combine patriotism and outdoors kind of feel and experience and lifestyle, and you've got an innovation. So that's you're illustrating all the theories that we love to talk about. So congratulations. Hey, I want to do two things. Yeah. One is I want to get into so you've described your interests and your understanding and your expertise and what you love. How did you know and how did you find that there are customers who feel the same way and get the same inspiration and the same excitement from what you're doing? Is that instinct or have you worked at that?
So it was a little of both, in the sense that, so there was some instinct there. I was like, I feel like amongst my small group, friends, family, et cetera, we would all love this stuff. But I'll be totally honest with you, Hunter. Other than that, there wasn't a lot of market research besides, I mean, what little I could do on the internet to really decide if I could, you know, create customers. And I was like, how am I going to get customers? So I decided, I was like, well, this is what I'll do. It's not like I have $1 million to start this company, right? So I'm going to take what little product I had really starting the company, because there's so many things that go into investing in the website, just really getting, you know, the designing software. There's obviously establishing your LLC. You know, we started off with, 96 t-shirts to start the entire company. We had 96 t-shirts. That was it. We had about 4 designs. And I was like, well, great. I have zero marketing dollars. We have, you know, we have an official established LLC. There's all that, you know, all the things that go into that. A million things I'm probably forgetting right now. And I got some product, and I think it's pretty dang cool. But how do I know if anyone likes it besides friends and family, like I just described to you, kind of through instinct? And I was like, well, I feel like the types of customers that I like, you know, how can I go meet, like, that would like our product? How can I go meet them in person? So that's when I kind of got the idea to start looking up some actual vendor events, some in-person events where I could be like, well, maybe I'll do some market research there. We have 96 t-shirts. If we have something here, well, maybe, you know, people will like really connect themselves to this brand the way I feel connected to it. So I showed up at a gun show in a small town in northern Utah, and I had zero idea what I was doing. I was actually looking at a picture of this last night. I was looking through some pictures. I was doing some family picture project with my wife, and I was like, this picture is, it's such a special picture to me because it's literally me holding my son. You know, my son was up there with me, and it was just a big empty table, and I had four different t-shirt designs all just laid down right in a row. And that was literally the day the company, in my mind, really started. Mm-hmm. Because the doors opened up and people, I got to interact with my customers. And before I knew it, I was sitting there like figuring out how to work my point of sale system for the first time, really. You know, I had looked at it to make sure I kind of knew what to do. But I was like, wait, people are buying stuff? Like, it was kind of this exciting shock to me. And from that moment on, I was like, not only have I found how to reach my demographic of customer in person, I'm really starting to understand that people want this product, and I was getting real in-time feedback. So we blew through that whole inventory within like two shows. So I did a couple different gun shows, and there's some other like farmers markets I did. And that's really how we started just recycling all that inventory back into a nest egg for the business. Yep. To really actually have a little bit more capital to actually start doing some things. And that's really kind of how we started. We really found our customer to start off with.
Yeah.
Is just getting out there and going, okay, I'm going to go try to sell these in person with people around and see what happens.
It's not Google targeting. It's going out there and seeing them and talking to them, right? It's much
better. Yeah, so it was organic. I was like, I'm going to lean into this. I have a sales background. Let's go try to sell, you know?
That's great. Hey, I want to go backwards for a second, James, in this sense. So you got the t-shirts on the table. You've got a lot more inventory now, a lot of different clothing styles and items and so on like that. I want to work back to help people understand how you establish the business through the supply chain, which I'm thinking, firstly, how do you do design? Then how do you do the specifications to get those to a manufacturer? And how do you decide who's manufacturing and all of those kinds of things? Work us backwards through that supply chain aspect.
Sure. Okay. I'm going to try. Obviously, I rant. I'm sure your listeners know that now at this point. I'm going to try to keep it concise. So I would start with the design process, right? You have these ideas. You get an idea of what you're – I was starting off, I feel like, a little bit ahead of the ball on this too, just from my retail experience, knowing kind of what branding I wanted. I definitely wanted my brand printed on the inside collars. I wanted little hem tags sewn on the bottom of my t-shirts. I knew that my designs, I didn't want to do a lot of colors because I also knew I wanted to go a screen printing route. And the screen printing is, I'm sure most people listening have understand what screen printing is, but essentially I wanted to keep the colors to a minimal and I wanted them to be screen printed. That was really important to me.
Why is screen printing important? Just go there.
The quality of the print. So there's a couple different ways you can print garments now. That used to actually kind of be one of the only ways to do it. Maybe there's an older way that I'm not figuring it out, but that keeps the prints. It intertwines the prints with the garments just a lot more efficiently than other methods. Like there's direct to garment, for example, and direct to garment to like the way I even understand it and to kind of put it in like really like just like simple terms is like direct to garment is like basically. It's almost imagine like a computer printer, like a just computing printing, you know, just regular computer pages. It's pretty much like that for t-shirts, and it can print off 1,000 colors or one color. And I've always, at least with my experience working retail, I've never had t-shirts like that hold up as well or have the print pop as well as doing screen prints. So I already kind of knew, I had an idea of the aesthetic of my brand going into it just from past experiences. But then it comes down to like, well, I don't have like thousands and thousands of dollars to hire a graphic designer to do every single little thing I want to do. Mm-hmm. So I already just through kind of like curiosity. So I spoke earlier about me wanting to, you know, I always knew I wanted to do the entrepreneurial thing. I was also like really interested in art, like to a big extent. But I feel like I didn't have the experience. Like my mind could see what I couldn't draw on paper, right? And I think a lot of people have that. But I was like, well, it's, you know, there's a lot of technology out there. So I had some friends reference me. This was before I joined the military. So this is before the basic training stuff. They referenced me to Adobe Illustrator. They're like, you should just get a subscription to it. There's all these tutorials on there. It's one of the biggest platforms out there for graphic design. Even people that aren't super good at design, just like naturally, can make really professional pieces. There's lots of different resources there. And I was like, okay, I'll do it. So I started kind of dabbling into that for fun. But once I obviously launched the business and looked into how much all the graphic designing was going to cost, I was like, okay, I have these design ideas. I'm going to have to do at least most of the graphic design work on my own, right? So that's when I really started getting into Adobe Illustrator, and I essentially went to YouTube University, you know, and Google. There's so many things you can search for, and just, you know, the first time I opened up the program, it looked like a rocket ship. When I wanted to start actually doing more complex designs, there was a lot. There was a pretty big learning curve, but I was able to do everything I really wanted to do. On that note, though, there were certain things I couldn't do. I was like, there's just no way I can do this. I can't. Maybe it's one of my flag designs going across, you know, the landscape. I just couldn't get like the stars or the stripes right, whatever it might be on any specific design. So I was like, well, maybe there can't just be only, you know, graphic designers out there that charge, you know, $1 billion or whatever it is for everything. There's got to be some resources out there. So I got to researching, and there's a program or a platform out there I'm sure a lot of people have heard of called Fiverr. And Fiverr is great for startup entrepreneurs because it's really cheap. You've heard of it before.
Sure.
It's really cheap, and you can get anything. I mean, whether you need a logo designed or someone to create a short video for you, you can get everything done for, I mean, you can go really expensive if you want, but you can also start with standard packages. And there's two different designers I got working with where I would basically send them my ideas or the drafts of my designs and then have them just refine a few things. So it really wasn't a ton of graphic design work for them. So that I got that done for a really cheap price just based on kind of the stuff I already had done. So they would send that back to me, then I would send it back to them, and they'd refine it. But I know we're talking about supply chain here.
No, this is so great, because we have another fancy term for this. We call it the value network. You can connect to people who can add value to what you can already do, and the net is better quality, better value, and hasn't cost you a lot. That we love that.
Yeah. So that was, and a big part of this for me too is like, because I would tell a lot of designers I found were designers that also kind of believed in what I was doing too. Because like, again, I was like, hey guys, listen, like I really love your artwork and I want you to help me with my designs. And, you know, I don't have $1 billion, but maybe I will one day and you can start with me from the ground up. So I really want people to be a part of everyone who's helping me, even though it's just my business. I want everyone to feel like they're a part of this business. And if I grow and get bigger, they can grow and get bigger so we can all win together. So I definitely have a personal investment in the people that believe in me too. You know, I understand, you know, business is business. Sometimes people are like, listen, man, I believe in you, but you know, I can't help you for pennies on the dollar because I run this big firm.
But there are
a lot of guys.
Yeah. There's shared values and it's collaboration. And as you say, it might work out. But it's the right spirit. So you've got some specs. Do you write those down or do you keep them in your head? How do you, you know, the hem tag and the all of those kinds of things? You've got some designs.
Yeah, so those are all written down in Word documents, you know, that I have like saved in Google Drive. And then basically I have my Adobe Illustrator save files. And those are all in the cloud too, because you don't want to lose any of that stuff, obviously. But it's almost like essentially I have a Word document associated with every Adobe Illustrator document. And yeah, I'll write down notes essentially that probably only I can understand at this point. And then, you know, we have the Adobe Illustrator files that go with it. But yeah, everything specification wise, from sizes to colors, you want to have actually written down too. Kind of getting back to the supply chain. So I have my screen printers that I use, which I think are the best. They are at least the best screen printers in the state of Utah. unless there's someone I haven't tried before. So I didn't just land on the first screen printers to use my designs once they are finalized. I wanted to find like people that were going to do quality work. So I basically reached out to a bunch of different screen printers in the area and had them all do a couple prints for me. And what I found from that point on is, man, not all screen printers are created equal. That it is a very human process. There's some cool technology out there, but it's a very human process. There's how much ink do you apply? What are they getting the tones of the ink right when they convert it from my art files that I send them? So through that process, I was able to find a company that's been a pretty, actually, they were a local company, but they've been absorbed by a bigger company that literally, they have their tentacles in so many of the best screen printers in different states. So they've kind of already done, their whole business is based around finding the best screen printers. And it, honestly, I have to say they've definitely found them, because the guys I found here in Utah have done a kick butt job. But they'll get my screen prints, or they'll get my designs, and then they'll screen print them onto the garments. Now, going back to the supply chain, same thing with the garments. I did not just, you know, go, I mentioned earlier, I wanted everything we have available to be made in America, which was definitely a difficult route, which I can touch on later, but just keeping on the supply chain here. Same thing, I'd ordered a bunch of samples from a bunch of different made in America wholesale companies. It was not as easy as a Google search. It really wasn't. You think it would be American made wholesale into a search engine. You have to do some digging and some calling and figuring out how to get samples, etc. So we got a bunch of different ones. And again, I found out really quickly. I was like, man, I don't like a lot of these garments. I need to find, it can't just be American made. It has to be premium quality. It really does. It's so important to me. So once I did finally find the right guys, that is really how the supply chain works. I go straight to my screen printer. So I don't skip them and go to the wholesaler. I could do that, the manufacturer, but there's a really specific reason I don't. And the reason I go to my screen printers to order the garments is because literally of the level of just investment the screen printers have in ordering the product themselves, because they mark it up to sell it to me.
Sure, sure.
So I could skip that markup. So you might be thinking right now, why would you skip that markup and screw with your margin so much? And it's because honestly, the screen printers, they, like I said, it's a human process. Things get messed up. And if I provide garments to them to screen print on, they will, the liability's on me, not them. So if they misprint, you know, 1,000 t-shirts, I have to eat all of that. But if they misprint 1,000 t-shirts, they'll totally, they're like, no, we own that. And then not only that, like I said, these guys are local guys. They do a great job. And I'm like, I want these guys to love printing for us. I want them to be excited to move our product to the top. Whatever I need, they can. So I wanted to support them, honestly. I mean, that's a big part of this company, is supporting the economy.
That's brilliant, because you're creating profit for them and you're creating responsibility for them. So that's a great combination.
Hunter, I'm telling you this, like it's, I feel so vindicated in some of these decisions, because even recently, it's like they opened up my options to something that they now have available called catalog pricing. And that's just their marketing way of saying like, hey, you buy from us so much that we want to give you better pricing. And to get that better pricing, here are our better pricing tiers just for you, because you're one of our best customers. So because I decided to stick with them, now I'm basically getting the same price I would have if I had skipped them, you know? So it's easier on me too, honestly. It's just one less, avenue of communication I have to go through. I can just go to one guy who does all of my garments. They're the ones that order my garments, you know, and if there's anything I'm interested in, because there's a lot of different American-made wholesalers out there, like we get our beanies, for example, from a different source than we get our t-shirts. So all I have to do is just call my screen printers and go like, hey, I just got a couple samples from these guys. I love them. I want us to go essentially through this company. So it's nice. They're my one-stop shop. I can still do my own research and make my own big decisions, and they'll just do whatever I basically ask them.
Again,
to,
it's a network. Awesome. So go into Made in America. You said, we call that a constraint. It's a constraint that you've chosen.
It is.
You said that's a constraint within which I'm going to work, and it can be, it's focusing, it's energizing. You got to fulfill the constraint, but you said there's a lot to it. So take us a little bit further into Made in America.
Yeah. So I had no idea when I was like, oh, I'm going to do it Made in America. I just thought it would be, like I said earlier, a Google search away. I'd find some great American made wholesalers and the price would be great. And I could start off with these small minimums as I built the company. It wasn't like that at all. It was, I quickly learned that, I mean, just through research, it's like 97 and 98% of clothing in the United States is not made here. Mm-hmm. So I just felt like I didn't have options. And still, like, even to this day, there's certain things where I'm like, okay, this is a route I want to go. And I haven't found the route I want to go yet. Like, for example, right now I'm working on trying to find flannels, right? Now, when you try to find flannels made in America, it's a very, there's a couple different companies I've looked at. And I've been looking at their minimums, and their minimums are just, they're really high. My company hasn't carried flannels before, so I don't have data to go off of. You know, it's one of those kind of instinct moves where I'm like, I know this would be good for sales going into the fall, but it's tough. It's not like if I just lifted that constraint of made in America, I would have a billion companies to choose from that are pretty high quality too. They're, you know, and it's a little bit cheaper too. So I really focus on that mission of like, hey, I want to support the economy on a domestic level. And it's a leap of faith in the sense that people will support me because I'm making this extra effort to just make products here, as opposed to just taking the cheapest, fastest, most available route. That was the leap of faith I took in the beginning. And I think that's one of the big reasons we've had a lot of support, is because as opposed to just ordering everything I wanted in mass quantities all at once, I just said, no, we'll start it small if we have to. And that's kind of how we'll build. So, it is a constraint when it's just purely analytical, margin, business minded, but it really has been a huge, I just don't think our company would be where it's at if we hadn't chose to go.
The constraint's a positive idea, actually. It focuses you in a specific way. So let's go forward again into brand. We've talked about this a little bit, but I want to delve further into that. So the brand has what we might call imagery, the outdoorsiness and the patriotism and so on like that. We always like to think about the customer experience. They have an experience and a feeling of dealing with you and wearing with your clothes. Have you talked to any of the folks at the gun shows about that, about the feeling they have for the brand? Does that make sense, or is it all just quality and imagery?
No, it does. No, it really does give you a feeling. So what people have literally told me, like verbatim, is like, I mentioned earlier, I said the patriotic version of Patagonia. And a lot of people, I don't know if you know Patagonia, but Patagonia is a huge outdoor lifestyle brand that's all about nature and hiking. I literally had a customer tell me once, and I've heard it multiple times since. They're like, man, you guys are like the patriotic version of Patagonia. They're like, this is so, what people will say is it's so me. And just from conversations, what they're communicating really is the exact feeling I really want people to have to wear our garments, which is just a love. There's so much negative out there. I wanted our brand to be positive about having gratitude for this country and the beautiful landscape it holds. And when you wear one of the Rogue White and Blue t-shirts, like we want you to feel patriotic. I want a sense of patriotism. That's really what we want to instill in people. So we want to be that patriotic brand that really brings a level of patriotism to the outdoor lifestyle brand industry, which doesn't have, it's just missing that patriotism. It's like, we love the mountains. We love hiking. We love the desert, backpacking, camping, getting out there. We also love this great country. And like, we love that we can roam it and explore it freely. It's so crazy to me that there aren't a billion more brands that are starting to do what I'm doing, just because I'm like, it's like, you just don't have a category for that yet. I mean, we are that category. You do now. We are that category. So that's what people really see. I know I'm ranting a little bit. I'm excited. Something that I also get all the time from people in person. This is one of the reasons I love in person, because when you see online orders come in, it's great. In-person sales, the real-time feedback you get from customers, which I never take any level of feedback I get for granted. The negative, the positive, it's all there, but I really think about it. I really think about it, because I also know that people get naturally defensive about their businesses. They put everything into it, right? So you protect it. You hold on to it. I've always made it a big effort, and my wife has helped me a ton with this, not to be that guy that doesn't listen just because they get offended about their decisions regarding the business, right? So when I hear people, so many people tell me this. They're like, I love that, you know, you go to a lot of these events that, you know, that where so many of the customers, they love freedom. They love the Constitution. They're just freedom loving people, right? And they're like, I love that your garments make a statement, but it's not overly aggressive and negative or mean. Like, it makes a statement. I can tell people that I love this country and I'm an outdoorsy person without, you know, having some kind of like, I don't know, some kind of crude political statement on there, which I'm not against those shirts. They're funny shirts. They're great. But a lot of my customers go, I'm like, man, I'm so glad that like this is here. This is available that I can make a statement without, you know, having to take this shirt off when my kid goes to school or having to take it off when I go to church or whatever it is.
Yeah.
So I do get that all the time. So that's something I, you know, it sometimes it's tempting. You're like, oh, should I go into that? Is that a little bit too edgy or offensive? I'm like, I don't, that's not who we are. We're just positive. We're for all ages. We're for families. That's yeah. what we
no,
want
to do. Great, so. It's a great uniqueness that you've achieved there. So let us think about the future a little bit. I don't want you to give anything away or make any commitments or anything like that. But do you have time now to think about the future? Where is this going? How can I expand it? How can I grow it? What'll be next? Do you think about that?
I do. It's almost like it's too much. I feel like any entrepreneur or anyone who started their own business just knows it's like you always are thinking about the business. I always tell my wife, so it's like we're new parents. My first kid's almost two. She's pregnant right now. And I'm like, man, Rogue White and Blue is the baby that's always crying in the background. It needs attention. It needs thought. It needs like, what are you going to do for it? What kind of education are you going to give it? You're thinking about the future of your business all the time in real time, you know, whether it's in the next 2 hours, the next 2 days, next 2 weeks, 2 years, etc. It's a long way of me saying, yeah, I'm thinking about it very actively. And so this is where I have some dissonance. So I'm just talking in real time to you right now. This is my real stream of thought is, for me, I'm an in-person salesperson. My experience really is retail. So I've always been a big believer in whatever your God-given abilities are, you should lean into those and don't just be good at them naturally. Be great at them because you're already starting ahead of the curve on things that you're good at. There's plenty of things I'm really bad at. And I struggle sometimes with trying to make those bad things up to an acceptable or good level. And I sit there and go, all this is doing is making all the things I was naturally good at, it's bringing them all down to a level playing field of me just not being so good at anything. So as I continue to focus on this business and build it, I really am going to lean into the things I'm good at, which is in-person sales. So I'm really thinking about taking this thing retail. It just really depends. I don't want to force anything. The dissonance I have is like, I want to make sure that the business is leading me in the direction it needs to go, that I'm not forcing some kind of, entrepreneurial dream that doesn't sync up with the business, right? Because we all have dreams about where we want it to go. But gosh, I forget where I heard this, but it's kind of cheesy, but it's totally true. It's chase the green, not the dream. Like you can do both in the sense that it's not all about money, but I mean like the business is going to let you know where to go. Like hold to your principles, you know, like you can still, it's not chase the green, like just be a sales shark by any means, nothing like that. But it's, you really have to just look at the data, look at, you know, you can trust your gut on certain things. You know, when you're forcing stuff, you know, so I really do plan though. I do have kind of rough plans of taking this retail, but I just don't want to force it. So I want to make sure it's right.
So
I feel like we could create an experience. So.
The fancy term for what you're talking about is feedback loop. So you've got the feedback loops from your customers. We really feel good about this and you've adapted to that. You got to figure out the feedback loops that'll tell you where to go next. And you'll do that. I can tell that you'll.
And it's already starting to, you know, it's starting to, it's like I said, it's just me and my wife that run the company. And it's just, we are starting to feel like we're getting that. I'm sure you can relate to this. A lot of people can, where you get to a point where you feel like you're catching up all the time. And then a month later you go, I still haven't made any, like I'm not being proactive. There's certain things I need to do proactive to grow the business. Right. So we're reaching that point. So we're reaching that point where we're like, okay, we're going to have to start bringing on some people to help us at those areas I talked about that I'm not so good at, that they can do much better. Right. So we do need to grow this into a team at some point, probably sooner than later. We're just, you know, when you're a small business, you hold on to it probably really tight. You know, you really want to make sure you bring in the right people. You don't want to force that. You don't want to force it just by bringing in someone random, or you want to make sure you meet the right people when it fits.
You need that guy who opened the camper van office in the remote location that,
those guys are awesome. They have their own, they just rock. They rock. I plan to hopefully
found you. That was pretty smart.
Yeah, right? I'm glad you think that. Honestly, you got to sit down with my wife after this, Hunter. You'd be like, wow, it was a catch.
So let's, I want to capture the idea of the entrepreneurial life. You obviously have figured it out. You've done it with a family. You've grown your family while you've been an entrepreneur. You've had time to be in the National Guard at the same time. But maybe it's not for everybody. What have you found out about the entrepreneurial life? How do you feel about it? Do you feel secure? Do you feel safe? Do you feel excited? Do you feel scared? And you know, how would you share that with other people?
Gosh, I feel like all the above. Like excited. It depends on the day. Sometimes doing this, but it's always a level of excitement. I had no idea. It's one of those things that you jump into. You're like, if I had known ahead of time what the lifestyle was going to be, would I still have pressed the yes button? For me, absolutely. But I totally understand why, you know, doing this is not, it's not for everyone. And I don't mean that in a way that it's like, it's not for everyone. It's only for this. It's like, no, there are plenty of people that just absolutely rock, that go on to work for awesome businesses, and they work more traditional 9 to 5, and they're able to just absolutely crush it, leave their fingerprints on a company, grow a company, and they're there for their family all the time. It's a great schedule. For me, I love the nomadic kind of unexpected life of being an entrepreneur. You have to work honestly, you're always working to an extent. And it's like, you know, we have young kids. I work lots of late nights. I work really early mornings. I work most weekends. Those things are really exciting in the beginning because you're so excited to be, I have work to do. Like, we got a business that's growing. It's super exciting. And then I think a lot of people, I have a couple of friends that run businesses, and I've seen them kind of hit this point. So I've kind of had like I understand what happens is you get, wow, does this ever stop though? Am I always going to be working weekends? Am I always working into the night? Am I always doing? So I'm still like day by day, I always am trying to manage that. You know, I want to be first and foremost, I want to be a good dad and a good husband. Like family is 100% number one for us. So I'm still managing that, but I absolutely love it. And one of the reasons I love it so much is because I'm excited and I'm happy. And I think when I'm happy and I'm able to be around my family and be a more energetic, motivated, happy person, just overall, it's a net good for me as a human to be doing this. It is definitely less stable. It's less stable, and we're still a new company. You know, we launched this company about, 13 months ago now. So I literally just started paying myself, which is really like, I don't want to toot my own horn here, but that's like good for a startup. That's definitely good. That was unexpected and not part of the game plan. You know, we were really going to rely more on savings I had aside to really get us through the beginnings of the startup. So we're definitely ahead of schedule on that. But the stability wise, it's like, yeah, can I project how much I'm going to be able to pay myself over the next 2 months? Sure. Is that projection going to be accurate? Probably not. It could be more, which would be great. It could be a lot less. Those things are always possible. For I think any entrepreneur, right? You know, and it's that's just the way it goes. You know, it definitely gets more stable once you're I definitely have some more avenues of stability that I'm looking at. You know, there's wholesale that we're starting to go into. We just got our first wholesale account, so we can have more revenue that we're starting to depend on more frequently. So there's so many directions to go, and you know, the stability thing I think is very normal in the very beginning. But yeah, if you're excited about it and passionate about it, and your customers have told you have a good product, whatever it is, whether it's clothing or whether it's you being your own real estate agent, whatever it might be, like you can sense it. You sense it. It's like I said earlier, like letting the business decide for you. Like, you know, when you need to do something else, like the cosmos will tell you. I really believe that. But yeah, you know when you're on the right path. So
good.
That's where I feel like I'm at, and I'm excited. So.
Well, the last thing I want to touch on is just what we call the ethic of service. We think of entrepreneurs as serving others. You do it in the National Guard. You make your customers feel good, but also you're providing service to your screen printers, as you talked about, and others in your network. Is that ethic of service? Does that ring true? Is that something we should develop? Is that a good way to talk about entrepreneurs?
I think so, 100%. I mean, like I always look local first. That is like my policy to actually be able to, like, when we do well, our screen printers are doing well. And it's a different feeling. Like, I don't directly employ the people I work with, obviously. These are the contracted relationships we have. But really, it's like these guys have become my friends. Like, it's awesome. Like, for me to know that, like, some of what I'm doing is helping people take home a paycheck, not just me, is like, it's a big deal. And there's like a level of responsibility and pride that goes along with that. For example, it makes you think differently of, like, even just paying taxes. It's made me think of, like, when I pay taxes, I pay so much more attention now than I ever had. It was when I look at everything. I'm like, what's that? Well, what's that? What's that? What's that? Yeah. And it gives you a level of definitely kind of ownership in my community. And then also, like, I'm like, okay, I want to make sure that my, you know, even like little things, like I want to make sure my tax dollars are at work. I want to make sure, like, I paid so much money in taxes. I want to make sure that the services that my taxes are supposed to provide are working efficiently. So this is me becoming an old man in real time, because now I'm starting to really hate, how does my city run this? Maybe I'll write a letter to so-and-so. I think we could do this better. I'm like, oh my gosh, I'm becoming old in real time.
This that's a very original point about entrepreneurs. We love this concept of service, and maybe the idea of employment goes away, that you're a partner in this network. You're engaging screen printers and designers and so on like that. They're not employed, as you say. They're your partners in the network, and that's how the world works better. It's a better world when it's entrepreneurial as opposed to employed.
Yeah, it's totally true. I mean, these guys will even get on my website and browse the website and send me feedback. Because they want us to do well. They want us to do well, which is awesome. So it's cool.
Well, I'm the one who's wandering off point up. So let's wrap it up there, James. Thank you so much. This is a brilliant exposition of what we think of as entrepreneurship and doing it in practice. You're great at what you do. You're excited. You're passionate. You're good for the economy. You're good for your partners. You're good for everybody. So thank you very much. Hey, for.
I'm trying.
Well, that's the whole point, right? Let's try. Good.
It is. It's true. It's true. Life is exciting. It really is. So
good. James, thank you very much.
Absolutely. Thanks for having me on, Hunter. I hope to run into you again soon.
Oh, we will. We will.
Okay.
Economics for Business is a production of the Mises Institute. To explore more content like this, visit econforbusiness.com. And for more from Hunter Hastings, visit HunterHastings.com.